Oh my god, an insane goal!
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast, where today we're doing a roundup of the biggest news in football this week, including Emery out, Ljungberg in a new era starts at the Emirates, Messi wins his sixth Ballon d'Or, Cristiano Ronaldo not happy as usual, and our cultural picks of the year. Today I'm joined by George Wright.
Good evening.
And Joe Tomlinson.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Wow. It's a very ginger podcast today. Thank you both for joining me. It might be a bit ropey, though, because Joe and I are both coming off extended breaks.
Yes.
How are you feeling after your trip to New York?
Bit worn out. Bit worn out, but I like America. I've never been. And
what do you mean? You went to America for KSI?
Never been. I've been twice in a month. Oh. So
All right, okay.
Let me finish my sentence, you bastard, and you'll get the full news.
You're bi-coastal.
Don't know what that means, but...
You're on both coasts, the East Coast and the West Coast.
Yes, I was on the East Coast and the West Coast, and I definitely preferred the East.
Yeah?
Yes, 100%. New York is far superior to LA.
Well, you're not just driving for an hour between things.
Yeah, and I mean, LA, it's just nothing really there.
Like I've heard that.
It's like kind of sporadically laid out, and it just feels like I have to take an hour to do anything, get anywhere, and see anyone. Whereas New York, you can just walk.
Understood.
How was Japan?
Oh, it was lovely, thank you. Thank you for asking it. It was tremendous. It's actually, I think, it's either the best or the second best holiday I've ever had, but I think the best.
Is everything shipshape and shiny? Because I don't think I've ever seen a photo of a Japanese road with rubbish on.
I mean, I did come back to London, and like the first day I saw some dog shit, and I was just like, what is this?
Wouldn't see that in Japan.
And like, yeah, genuinely, every toilet is so clean, and the toilet seats, they're heated. They flush themselves. They have all that like bidet function shit, and they play sounds and stuff.
Why do they like that? I like a toilet to be a toilet. I like to shit and get off the pot.
Oh, I'm sorry, our fancy metropolitan toilets aren't good enough for you, George. What have you been up to?
Nothing. Just keeping the ship steady somehow when everyone's just fucked off.
He says as if he isn't going on holiday for a week in about 2 days.
Yeah.
Well, where are you going?
Going to Berlin.
Really?
Yeah.
Christmas in Berlin?
Yeah, going to loads of Christmas
markets.
Like
the Russian army.
I haven't had a currywurst before.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, I've heard it. It's
really spectacular. Good,
yeah, in Berlin in particular.
There's also a Käsekreiner, which is like a sausage with like cheese in the middle. And I really also recommend, rather than... I like Bratwurst, but get a Krakauer, which is like...
It's look like, at him flowing here, just knocking off German
words. It's like the best... It's like if a Saveloy was made by like a Michelin star chef.
How can you be better than a Savoy? Savoys are great.
It is, though.
And the markets are fantastic in Berlin.
They are good. All right, let's roll into this. Yeah. So we start with the new era at the Emirates. Unai Emery relieved of his duties. Arsenal fans just plain relieved. He was sacked on Friday by the Gunners after an embarrassing home loss to Eintracht Frankfurt. One of many... Actually, there have been more embarrassing home draws, really, so far this season. Arsenal had 4 wins, 6 draws and 3 losses in the league when Emery went, with a negative goal difference. They're absolutely bush. It's no surprise he went. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah, Ornstein said that Emery was officially sacked before the Eintracht Frankfurt game. But the decision...
What?
We hadn't been told.
Oh, no.
He hadn't been told.
Oh, as in like, they decided.
Yeah.
I was about to say, that'd be amazing to be like, now go out there and perform, Unai.
So you're Arsenal fans... Ljungberg, what are you saying?
Well, that's what I kind of wanted to talk about, like the returns from the first match, because
You were crap first game.
I thought we were fine in first. I thought we were good in the
first like 25 minutes. We looked pretty good. Like even after the game, before this game on coming up, he says in his press conference like we looked better. We got behind their defence a lot more, and all the data backs everything up that we improved attacking wise.
Any danger of you closing a man down?
But well, he said in transition there's still a lot to work on, and at least he's identified that.
But also, I mean, there was a lot of it that I was just like, yeah, this is just bad defenders.
Stop letting them shoot.
It wasn't us playing like the team necessarily like playing badly, but you're like, yeah, just close someone down.
Like
Cantwell had all the time in the world.
I've never seen like. On when we lose the ball, all our players sprint back and get into position, but they just... It's like watching a football table. They don't close down the ball.
They keep running backwards.
Yeah. It's just
like
really
it's
odd.
It's a basic rule of thumb that when you get to the edge of an area, like, you just stop. Stop letting everybody run into the area. Like, attack a man. Your defensive midfielders and your centre-back in line on the edge of your own 6-yard box.
There was no closing down whatsoever.
It's crazy.
At the same time, I do think it is the rare match this season where you could say... you know, like the XG had it at 1.96 for Arsenal, 0.81 to Norwich. And I mean, like, you look at that first goal, that is, I mean, it's stupid. It's also bad defending, but it is a bit of bad luck. And while Leno was good, I thought the substitutions actually were pretty bad from Ljungberg. Like in the second half, we ended up in that sort of 4-2-4 situation. They had no control. Because going into the final half hour, we were massively outshooting them for once this season. And we ended up with 16 shots to their 15, which is an improvement. But still, it's we just had no game control in the final half hour.
Lacazette was very poor on the day as well. And
what do you do with him? Do you play him a bit deeper and play like advanced forwards, like kind of like Liverpool, and try and mirror that and play Pepe and Aubameyang either side, split forwards, I mean, and drop him in the hole?
I love Lacazette to bits, but this season I wouldn't start him in every away game. I think he's just... The thing is with Lacazette, he's very strong. He's quite the opposite when he was brought in. I thought he'd be very weak but quite quick, whereas it's the opposite. He's just very strong on the ball.
Yeah.
And he isn't particularly quick whatsoever. And I feel like in away games, if Aubameyang was surrounded by two wingers, we'd be so much better off.
I think it depends. If they're going to sit deep, like Lacazette is so much better at link-up play than Aubameyang.
Yeah.
It's like, and it seemed weird to me that Lacazette was kind of seen as the problem after this game. To me, we just had no game control. The issues, of all the issues Arsenal have, attack is not one of them.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I didn't understand the decision to play Ozil on the left. I thought he looked a little bit lost out there.
He was working harder though. He was chasing people down. But is that and what you want? Thinking about having a tackle.
I know that's like that's the narrative around Ozil. But is that actually what you want Ozil to be doing? Like,
not necessarily. But I think the reason that we haven't, well, I mean,
I think at half time, I don't think he created a chance or had a shot.
But I do think this is the issue with Ozil and Pepe, which is that neither one of them works terribly hard.
Yeah.
And you do then, and this is why, you know, it would have been good to keep Iwobi maybe, or you might want to play Martinelli on the left because he will defend for his life. You know, he's a classic 18-year-old. He really wants to impress.
Yeah, it was really weird, like the substitutions in particular. Like, I know Ljungberg has coached Saka for probably about 2 or 3 years now, or maybe just a bit less, but to go to him rather than Pepe seemed really odd.
Yeah.
But maybe it's just because he knows what Saka can bring him, like, guaranteed. But it is Nicola Pepe who cost £72 million. Like, he should be...
Saka was pretty good when he came on as well, to be fair.
I feel it didn't make as much an impact as Freddie would have hoped. And I feel like the thing is with Pepe, he scored 2 goals in Victoria and then he was benched the next game. I just feel like we haven't given him a big chance to have a consistent run in the side, and it's really affected him. Like, his confidence is rock bottom.
What was your midfield three again? You had Guendouzi, Xhaka, was it
Willock? Yeah.
Willock, and then Torreira came on.
Which
later
is an odd one, because like Guendouzi and Xhaka you think of as kind of slightly more disciplined, I guess. But like Guendouzi, I don't know whether he's gone off the ball recently. I watched a load of Arsenal games, but I thought he was pretty poor.
He wasn't. I don't think it was his best game. But I felt like it was. I think it was. It's tough. Especially the run we're on, we ain't won the league in 2 months. So it looked, for the first 20 minutes, it looked like we actually had a midfield, is what I'd say. For the first time in about 6 months, we looked like we had a midfield.
But when Ljungberg put that team out, you must have been thinking, what's going on?
It was a really poor lineup.
If Emery put that lineup out, he would get battered for it.
But then you do look at it and you think, okay, well, then there's a clear path for this to be better. Like, you put in Tierney, you put in Bellerin, you know, you gradually like upgrade some pieces there. And maybe you don't try and play Lacazette and Aubameyang together unless you're going to play a proper front two. And then you think, okay, that's a pretty decent looking side. And in the first half hour, it was like we were playing downhill. You know, like every time Norwich got the ball out, we just went back and it was coming back at them every time. Until, of course, our defenders are calamitous, which is, you know, the same
Mustafi
story.
Mustafi in all fours at one point.
The moment when Mustafi was trying to chase down Pukki and tripped over his own feet was just the epitome of Mustafi, wasn't it? And why he's starting, I don't understand. There can be surely no grounds to justify Ljungberg starting him in that game.
Well,
Mustafi?
Yeah.
I think he's a better passer than Sokratis. Sokratis is probably the best defender out of Luiz, Sokratis and Mustafi isn't actually at defending, but he's still not good. And he's so bad on the ball, he's an idiot.
I think Sokratis has a big argument that he's been our worst centre-half this season. And Mustafi...
So but Mustafi hasn't really played, has
he? Well, Mustafi's kept a clean sheet in all but one game, I think.
Well, he played 3 games.
All Europa League games, yeah.
But, yeah, you know. And we have been outrageous in the cups for the most part up until the sidetrack game.
And I kind of look at... Sokratis, he might not be the best, but with Norwich, you know that they're fairly decent attack. They score goals. They're horrible at the back, so you are going to score against them. I think they're averaging 2 or 3 goals conceded.
Yeah, they've got this season. They've got one of the. So I looked into some like historic numbers, and I Arsenal were conceding 16.2 shots against per game so far.
So many.
Of the 220 team seasons in the Premier League since 2009-10, right, so there have been 220 seasons played by a team in that time, only 30 saw a team allow more shots. One of those is Norwich this season. Of those 30, 14 ended in relegation, and only two of those teams ended the season with more than 45 points. Birmingham, I think, ended with 50.
What the hell?
So, I mean, Emery's sacking, pretty justified, and it's not surprising it's going to take Ljungberg some time.
Yeah. Do you want to keep Ljungberg?
In an ideal world...
What do you want?
I want Pochettino.
So you want Ljungberg gone tomorrow and Pochettino tomorrow?
Yeah, I think Ljungberg said in the press conference he had no problem stepping back to whenever a new manager comes in.
Even if it's Arteta... Because that's my concern, because I actually would put Arteta quite high on my list of candidates if we want to get a guy in like now, mid-season.
Okay.
But you could imagine Freddie being like, well, I was a first-team coach. Arteta's a first-team coach.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to go back. Like, you could imagine him not taking that demotion.
And I think if you want Poch, you lose Freddie because he's going to bring 7 or 8 coaching staff.
No, you could just say to him, though, you'd be like, this is one of the conditions, like Freddie Ljungberg estate. Like, the club are committed to Freddie...
I know you saw that in Bayern, but we're not Bayern Munich. Like, Bayern Munich are hot, like...
Yeah.
They're so
regimented. I don't know if you've seen this thing today about Bayern Munich and Pochettino.
No.
So the reports, is it in Bild? I think it was in Bild, wasn't
Bild,
it?
Yeah.
That Bayern Munich have said no to Pochettino.
Okay.
Because he wants to bring 7 or 8 backroom staff with him.
Okay.
And traditionally, Bayern are very stringent on keeping their own backroom staff that they've had there for... about 110 years. So they don't want to get rid of backroom staff to make way for Pochettino's.
Okay.
So I think if you're Arsenal and you're Ljungberg, you either go into the academy. I'd be very surprised, is what I'm saying, if he was kept within Pochettino's setup.
I think he'd be kept around. It would be much like what Emery did with Bold, I guess. Just kept him around for a bit. Was demoted to the third bench along.
Yeah.
I think the club would probably say like...
Ljungberg, they'd find a role for him.
They'd find a role for him. And also, you know, bear in mind that a load of roles have been vacated by Emery's backroom staff. Like, there are several. I think 5 or 6 of those guys are out.
So do you actually think it's feasible that Pochettino in the past has said, I wouldn't even join Barcelona because my allegiance to Espanyol.
He said, I'd rather go back and be a farmer.
Would he rather be a farmer than join Arsenal now?
The thing is, they're just quotes. Like, I mean, if I was him, I wouldn't join Arsenal because we are an absolute clusterfuck, but I wouldn't want to join Man United either because there's no route to recovery for Man United at the minute.
Yeah, I totally agree. But you're Pochettino, you've got... you're probably a big ego and you back yourself to turn whatever situation you're arriving around.
But the thing is about Pochettino, like, I always thought, oh, he'll have his pick of clubs, and people keep saying that, but now I look at the clubs around Europe and I think, who? Like,
I think Bayern want Ten Hag.
Yeah. Bayern will go for Ten Hag next summer. Like, Juve is set, Inter is set, Atleti is set, Real Madrid. I'd actually say Zidane is having his most impressive season as a coach in that he's managed to turn a squad which is all over the shop into definitely title contenders.
Yeah.
Barcelona might be looking for a coach, but he said he won't go to Barcelona. So
Manchester City might be looking for a coach at the end of the season. But like, I think
they're grooming Van Bronckhorst and Arteta though.
Yeah, but I think if you wait until the summer, he will have one.
I think
he'll be
very foolish to make his mind up instantly.
He's going to, he spoke this week, didn't he, about saying that he's taking 10 days out and he wants to come straight back in, doesn't really want to rest he's this young.
For any, I know this sounds like, because it's just Arsenal fans and United fans on this at the minute, like, we are historically the two of the biggest clubs in English football.
Along with Liverpool.
Yeah, along with Liverpool.
Yeah.
And to have that fan base and for a manager to potentially come in and revolutionise that is probably really quite exciting.
And Arsenal fans would go, like, I mean, as much as Spurs fans would be furious if Pochettino went to Arsenal, Arsenal fans do outnumber Spurs fans in London, and it would be like Sol Campbell, where everyone kind of rallied around him because he was getting so much grief.
The one thing I will say is that...
I don't think it's likely, though.
Listening to that Ornstein podcast this morning, I was just thinking, you know, he was talking about Arsenal not wanting to pay a great deal, or that sort of rumour circulating that you didn't want to pay to get a manager, you wanted a manager straight away because of the wages you're going to have to pay him, and you've just had to pay Emery out. I think Pochettino, because of the clauses in his contract with Tottenham, won't get his payout. So whichever club hires Pochettino is probably going to have to give Pochettino a fair chunk of money to offset the payout from Tottenham Hotspur being pulled from under him.
I feel like if you're a top club, you have to pay them wages now anyway. I guess Tottenham now, especially, Mourinho's on, what, 15 million a year, and he's earning 80k more a week than any other player in their squad.
And at the same time, they're paying this Pochettino money.
But can you afford to do that? Can you afford to give Pochettino a top earner and £10 million to offset the
Well, that's the thing. The extra money, like, that is a factor. Plus, we've got to pay, we're going to have to pay out Emery to the end of the year. Like, if you're not going to pay for, basically pay a transfer fee to bring a manager in, then that does rule out several of the guys. So of the front runners, there's been Nuno Espirito Santo. I don't think that's that serious, but you definitely have to pay Wolves something to get him
in.
Rodgers, you'd certainly have to pay some money to get him in.
I think with Rodgers was about 15 million. I think he's earning at the moment 5 million a season.
Ancelotti you'd have to pay as well, I think, because Napoli, even though they're a little bit unhappy with him, apparently they're obviously going to make you pay.
I heard today that he's on the, well, that PSG are going back in for Ancelotti.
He's been on the brink for ages of Ancelotti after the whole De Laurentiis situation with Napoli and them.
What do you mean, PSG? What, for the end of the season?
For the start of next season,
Because
Tuchel's going, isn't he? Tuchel's not going to still be at PSG at the end of the year unless he wins the Champions League.
But this is how I feel. I basically think that if you can get Arteta or Poch now, that's fine. Like, Marcelino would be good, but not permanently. Like, only temporarily.
And what's the thoughts on Arteta? You two are happy with him?
I wanted Arteta.
Seems very unproven and risk.
Yeah, the thing is of Arteta is there's something about the unknown which is always quite enticing. And I wanted Arteta before Emery because I thought, and you knew the thing is Emery, you know what you're going to get. You know you're going to get what a boring football who focuses on every other team apart from and not his own, especially at home. Like we could play in like Action Stan. He would try and nullify their strengths rather than focus on our own.
Right. Okay.
With Arteta, you've had him playing under, I mean, mock David Moyes all you want. He was still a successful manager back in the day. He played under Moyes, played under Wenger, and was heavily influenced by Guardiola, and he's one of Guardiola's key men now.
And when Guardiola went and got him, Guardiola beat Pochettino to him, who also wanted him, because they played together at PSG.
Yeah, Arteta and when you look at Guardiola's history, like when Tito took over at Barcelona, he should have, there was all the evidence that he was going to be an elite manager as well.
But he also has to want it.
I know.
And he doesn't necessarily want it.
Well, especially not mid-season.
Yeah, like, and especially, you rejected him first time, didn't you? In favour of going for Emery.
Yeah, because we rejected him because he
didn't, very upset.
He didn't have a big coach. He wasn't able to bring a ready-made coaching staff along with him, which was a big issue because all Wenger's old guard left.
So you rejected him. He's potentially a year out from getting a City job. Yep. If he is being groomed internally, as everybody seems to think he is, from taking over when Guardiola leaves at the end of his contract, do you leave if you're Arteta? You're going to get your. There's a 60% chance, I'd say, of getting
depends
the City
what,
job.
Depends what your offer is. And I do think City are also grooming Giovanni Van Bronckhorst. Like, that has been. Like, Giovanni Van Bronckhorst has, like, won a title, like, in the Netherlands, like, with PSV. Yeah. And yet he's got a backroom role at Man City, like, very clearly being groomed for a senior role, which you imagine would be manager.
Yeah, the thing is, Arteta might have a unique situation of the availability of joining three clubs, ones that he's been at. He could join Everton. Everton could be linked with him. Arsenal, Man City.
And I wouldn't leave City if you got a 40% chance of taking over from Pep for Everton.
Yeah, I mean, I probably agree with that. I mean, to be honest with you, my if you could get Poch now, you obviously do. I just don't think it's realistic.
Neither do I.
So to me, the sensible thing might be a caretaker or Freddie till the end of the season. Because I think in the summer, there are going to be candidates
available. So do I. I think Tuchel will be available. I think Tuchel will be available in the summer, especially if Bayern. I saw Bayern also linked to Tuchel today, though, as a partnership, with Hansi Flick.
Hansi Flick and him like have really good...
Yeah, apparently there's been talks behind the scenes about them taking over as a double act. So whether or not mental. That means Ten Hag links are off...
I mean, I feel like the news at the moment is that Arsenal do want to appoint a manager as soon as possible, but it could take up to a month because there could be like 12 candidates. So
which in itself is mental.
It does feel weird, doesn't it, that you haven't been planning for this, given that Emery's been shocking for 3 or 4 months.
There was, I think Ornstein or someone said that Raul wanted to give Emery a new contract at the start of the season.
But also my issue is that like when you... This 12-man shortlist, I bet it makes no sense because we saw the 8-man shortlist from when Wenger left. And it's all over the shop. Like, you've got guys on it who are like...
Ralf Rangnick.
Yeah, you've got Ralf Rangnick, who's going to play like high pressing. Like, Ralf Rangnick would have actually been amazing to come in before we got Edu. Like, he could have been coach and then maybe moved up later on. Like, but guys like Rangnick who want to play like really aggressive, like pressing football. And then, and Sampaoli was on it as well. And then at the other end, you had like Allegri. You had Allegri and there was somebody else. And Emery, of course, who's like a defensive coach. Like, then people who are unproven, like Arteta, who's a...
Eddie Howe.
Stevie really G's on the current 10-1 that I saw a couple of days ago.
But it's just all over the shop. And so I kind of think like, don't you need to start with the style of football you want to play, then build a shortlist based on that? Like, it seems so strange to just say your qualifications are you're a coach who's had some success or you've played for the club.
Yeah, I'm guessing that we didn't have Edu at that point as well when the shortlist was drawn, and it's his responsibility to mould the style and future of the club in terms of the squad and how what style we have going forward, because he still wants to preserve the Arsenal identity. I don't know what that is at the minute. I guess Arsenal needs what ever Wenger left over, pretty much.
Yeah. Possession based football.
Yeah. So you're hoping that, because I still think our sum was pretty good under Raul. We're just hoping that.
Except for that defence, never fixed that centre back. Did you? I mean, David Luiz, there was like a brief period of like, oh, he could be all right for a year.
Yeah. He's all right for a year until Saliba comes in. Thank God he didn't plan under Emery. but we'll see what he's really made of with this manager decision, because this could either propel us near to the top within 3 years or put us even lower within two.
So what would be your dream situation? Like, you'd say you'd like Poch, but like,
it's not going to happen.
You don't think it's going to happen. So what do you think?
Dream but realistic.
Feasibly happen.
Freddie till the end of the season. And then either, the fingers are too short. I do like Tuchel, but I'm not convinced, really not convinced by him. And Marco Rose more read into the Gladbach side and so far. The more it seems a bit Emery-esque, especially in defence. I literally have no idea.
I mean, they're all right in defence.
They conceded like more shots than they took.
Only recently, like at the beginning of the season, they're absolutely blowing teams. And even still, they're still blowing teams away. Like, the attack is out of this world. Plus, they're really young, man. Like, I think Marco Rosa might...
So you want Marco Rosa?
I think he'd probably be my top choice. And then after that, I would be looking at Tuchel, and I don't think you'll get Erik ten Hag, but he'd be on the shortlist.
Yeah.
I don't think Nagelsmann leaves Leipzig, otherwise he'd be on the list as well. But basically, I kind of just want like a German Dutch, Austrian manager.
Yeah. Like, I think Nagelsmann will, if he hasn't leave the summer, it'll be the summer after. I think he's going to spend more than two seasons at Leipzig.
I'd be surprised. I think he's got pretty much free reign at Leipzig now.
Maybe he's waiting for that Bayern job just to, like, I know that he's going to be filled before he leaves, but he's going to wait. And
the thing is with Arsenal and Arsenal fans particularly is that we're always going to be unhappy at whatever options available. We'll always find something bad to say about anyone. Like, it's not a perfect appointment, but you just have to hope.
So if you had to pick one?
Probably Tuchel.
Okay, so Tuchel. We both want Tuchel right up there.
What about you? If you are being objective,
If I was Arsenal, I'd just pay Brendan Rodgers his 15 mil and get him in.
Really?
Yeah.
You think he's that good?
I think he's the best of all the options that are available, and I think you need an immediate manager. I don't think you can give it to Jumbo till then, because you're gonna, I mean, not that you're gonna get in the Champions League with Rodgers, but I think you can really claw it back.
I think he would join us immediately, even though Leicester a second.
So do I. But you got to pay the money, and I don't think you'll pay that. But I just, all the names on the list, I think right now Rodgers is the best name. Like, Allegri is a better manager, but given that he doesn't speak any English and is apparently a nightmare behind the scenes, I'd just go for Rodgers.
Yeah,
now
he supposedly
bite the bullet.
Last time wanted to bring in 9 backroom staff.
And Poch is just not going to happen. So I'd just go for Rodgers.
The Arsenal like team who were like interviewing weren't really not impressed with his behaviour.
And I was like looking at, I mean, I was just thinking about that Liverpool side that he coached to a near league title, and there are some like parallels to them and you. Like, they're so top heavy, that Liverpool side, pretty average at the back, that he somehow managed to muddle together and then just got the best at the absolute maximum out of the forward line while he could.
I mean, he did have Suarez though going absolutely berserk. And yes, but he gets some like credit Aubameyang for that, but I feel like Suarez.
I feel like Aubameyang's going to hit 25 if you've got the right coaching.
Yeah, probably.
And then you've just got to get Pepe up to Raheem Sterling numbers back then, which wasn't massive anyway, even though he was like breaking through, and Lacazette to Sturridge. I think there are parallels in those two teams, and your midfield is different, because obviously he had the likes of Coutinho and an aging Gerrard then, I think, didn't he, with like Henderson.
Gerrard,
but there's creativity. I think he would get the best out of a Mesut Ozil as well, playing that Madison role. Just think he's quite nicely suited to your squad, but you're not going to pay 15 million to get him out of Leicester.
Plus, I think, like, when we're talking about like the values of Arsenal, like, you're talking about, yes, you're talking about style, like maintaining style and like the things we want to do, like bringing young players through. But I also just think, I just don't want Brendan Rodgers in the club.
That's exactly what I said on Winners and Losers. Yeah. Arsenal fans, he's just not exotic enough for Arsenal fans.
No, it's not exotic. It's just that he's a dick. Like, I think he's...
I think
even this Leicester thing, like the way he's talked about it, like, just shut up. Like, I find that really off-putting. Like,
he's very David Brent.
And also, you're at Leicester. You've got a great job. You're now favourites to finish in the top four. Like, shut up and just accept that you're in a good position. Like, but he's always like, he's always grinding. He's always like hustling. And I just don't really like, plus he tries to get his guys into recruitment. Like, he tries to bring in his own people. So Lee Congerton has gone to Leicester with him and immediately they pay 30 odd mil for Iosi Perez. Like, I don't know. I just think, I don't really trust Brendan Rodgers and I don't rate him highly enough to make up for that.
For the 50 mil.
As long as it's not Eddie Howe. Please.
It won't be Eddie Howe.
It won't be Eddie Howe.
I think they'd be more likely to go for like a Nuno or something, or just give it to Freddie.
Yeah. Although Nuno, you have to deal with the George Mendes situation.
Well, that's the thing with Raul now, is that very much in agents' pockets. George Mendes and Kia
Djurbachan,
yeah.
Okay.
Fun time.
So we're saying two Tuchels and a Rodgers and a Partridge and a Pear Tree, because it is Christmas.
Moving on to headlines now, and this week Lionel Messi picked up his sixth Ballon d'Or on Monday, setting a new record. He finished with 686 votes. That's just 7 ahead of Virgil van Dijk in second, while Ronaldo came third with just 476 votes. Yes. Messi's first Ballon d'Or win since 2015. What do we think? Deserved?
Yes.
Well, absolutely. I don't see, like, I know van Dijk had an unreal season and he's probably was the biggest like catalyst for Liverpool's
change.
But as long as Messi's playing football, there's no reason why he shouldn't win a Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, like, I believe he should have 10 Ballon d'Ors. Like, has he been the best player every year since he like started playing football? I think yes.
Yeah. It's just his numbers are ridiculous, and this is under a manager who is one of the biggest frauds in football right now.
Wow. Went there.
No, they are wasting so much talent at Barcelona.
Yeah. I mean, Messi just deserved to win it. I just don't see any argument against it. People that are talking about Virgil van Dijk, sure, probably the best Premier League player last season, but Messi's just held a different standards because he scores 100 goals.
Yeah.
Virgil van Dijk's the best defender in the world. Messi's the best forward and playmaker in the world.
He's amazing at everything. Like, he faces more traffic than any other forward, and yet he's a better passer, a better creator, a better goal scorer, the best free kick taker. The only thing he's not really good at is penalties.
Yeah.
Like, he's absolutely incredible at everything. And, like, I mean, Liverpool fans can't complain that much. They had 4 players in the top 7. And I think Liverpool are now in that really nice phase where they're so good that even their players who are not world class are being called world class. Like, I think basically any Liverpool player gets called world class, even when they're just, like, pretty good.
Well, I think the most telling thing is you couldn't tell me that if Messi went to Liverpool, he wouldn't be their best player. You couldn't tell me that. He absolutely would be. So that immediately makes him the Ballon d'Or winner. Because if he went to Liverpool, he would be miles better than Van Dijk. So
it is a reasonable point, yeah. And Virgil van Dijk, I think, took it absolutely fine. You know, he was kind of like, yeah, sure, like, of course. But Cristiano Ronaldo, not so much, because... Yeah. Van Dijk was asked by a journalist at the awards what it was like that one of his rivals had chosen not to show up because Ronaldo wasn't there, presumably because he knew he wasn't going to win.
Well, didn't he win the Serie A player?
He was at the Italian awards ceremony.
That's disgraceful, though, because he was not the best player in Serie A last year. He wasn't even as good as Quagliarella.
I don't even know that it was the Serie A player, but it was an Italian award, I think. Jesus. Yeah.
Anyway, Van Dijk responded to the journalist by saying, oh, was he one of my rivals then, about Ronaldo? And this was not taken as a joke, even though Van Dijk did subsequently clear up that it was a joke. Ronaldo's sister Katia has taken to Instagram to defend her brother. I don't really believe that it was Katia, because this rant kind of switches between the first and third person quite a lot. So let me read you a little extract from it. It is well known that Ronaldo will not win tonight's prize, although I have won important collective titles. But this is another conversation. Dear Virgil, keeps calling him Dear Virgil, where you are going, Cristiano Ronaldo has gone and has come 1,000 times. So this is Google Translate. Cristiano Ronaldo was a tri-champion in the country where you've been playing for years and you still haven't basically got a title. Cristiano Ronaldo was even the best player and best scorer in the country where you play, Virgil. By the way, I was even younger than you. So obviously Cristiano Ronaldo wrote this, right?
I feel like...
I don't know.
I feel like it could be a bad Google Translate job.
It could be, but yeah, it's much more fun to imagine that Cristiano Ronaldo was just like said to his sister, give me your phone.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean,
what's Cristiano Ronaldo doing coming third in this?
He had no reason to be in the top 10.
Yeah, it was optimistic. But does anybody care about third place, whether it had been Ronaldo or Mane or Salah or Bernardo or whoever else was in that top?
But that's the thing. Those guys, it would have mattered to them, whereas it doesn't matter to... Like, Ronaldo takes it as an insult that he's third, whereas I think, you know, if Mane had got it, Mane would have been, like, probably delighted.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't even the best Portuguese player last year, was he? Bernardo was. So...
Woof.
Well, Bernardo was. I mean, and
it's also,
I think he was better. I mean, given that he won, what, 6 trophies last year, did he? Bernardo Silva as well. 5, was it in the end? Nations League, domestic, quadruple. Probably his best ever season. Probably Man City's not their best player, given that Sterling turned up top 3 last season, Bernardo.
I mean, you'd have any of, like, the main Ajax players in over Ronaldo last season.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like,
and Mbappe and Lewandowski. Lewandowski's having the season of his life right now in a team that's had to sack their coach. I mean, like, and he keeps doing it. I don't understand. He's outscoring Ronaldo right now, and so is Dybala for that matter.
Yeah, I don't think Ronaldo should have been there. It's a bit of a PR job, wasn't it? But having said that,
well, it's journalists, isn't it? I mean, you saw the Sri Lankan guys votes who put Trent Alexander-Arnold as the best player in the world last season, and put Bonucci as the best player in 2017, which I rate, especially his moustache, which is fantastic.
Those are both quite rogue choices.
But yeah. Oh, yeah, he did have De Gea second in 2017, and that was rightly so.
That was, I'd actually say that's correct. Yeah, okay, fair enough then. Well, I don't know. I like to imagine that Cristiano Ronaldo was very pissed off about this, and I'm kind of pleased because I think that this basically means now that Messi will definitely have the most Ballon d'Ors ever.
Yeah,
like, Ronaldo's
might,
not going to win
another
one.
I think
he'll
finish on 7 or 8, won't he?
Will Ronaldo win another one?
The thing is, Ronaldo is like, everyone thought he finished 4 years ago and he popped up and put the best Champions League season ever. So you can never rule it out, but.
Never rule it out when Portugal somehow scramble their way to a World Cup, mate. Never rule out Portugal winning
in the group
World
of death
Cup
as well.
In some horrific circumstance, drawing their way to a World Cup win and he wins a Champions League and a Serie A under Sarri, he's winning the Ballon d'Or. So just don't rule it out.
All right.
Yeah.
Anything he does on the international scene ends up ranking higher than anything Messi can do domestically.
Yeah, Messi still needs to win that Copa America just to level them up. But Argentina been pretty dominant recently against
Brazil. They've actually been good, I've heard. Argentina have actually been good for the first time for how long?
Yeah, I saw the
30 years.
I saw that when they beat Brazil very narrowly, they had like 16 shots. Brazil had like 5.
Yeah.
And it was a really strong Brazil.
Apparently their tactics not just give it to Messi and watch him try and try again now. They're actually playing football and he's getting the best out of Lautaro Martinez.
Is he actually playing for them?
Yeah, and Lo Celso's playing in midfield. Oh, wow. Like, it's actually a pretty exciting time.
Lo Celso's probably got more Argentinian minutes this season than Spurs minutes. And he ain't going to get any under Jose either, is he?
He will. Come on, Harry Winks is never going to play for Spurs.
Yeah, but Harry Winks wouldn't. I don't think he's going to play anyway. We dropped at the weekend for Eric Dier in there. Eric Dier and Ndombele, defensive midfield.
I wonder how long the Eric Dier rehabilitation project
he's
will
playing
go
Eric, Eric Dier and Ndombele with Dele Alli as in front of them.
But is he not going to realise at some point that he could just play Ndombele instead of Dier and play Lo Celso alongside him? Like, bear
it's
in mind,
not big enough for Jose Mourinho, mate. Jose Mourinho does not play midfielders that small.
You say that, but like, we always think of him as a really defensive coach, but he played Fabregas in a midfield 2 alongside
Matic. Though Matic is big boy.
Yeah, but so's Ndombele. Ndombele's a big guy. Lo Celso's not small. Like, Lo Celso is bigger than Fabregas.
I'm not sure. You may see it occasionally, but very rarely are you going
to
see Ndombele.
We're yet
to
see who the one player Jose Mourinho would treat unfairly for no reason is so far. So,
oh, I can't wait.
We've still got
it'll
that storyline
eventually.
Oh, I can't wait. I wonder who it'd be. Probably Danny Rose.
Nah.
Probably the most vulnerable member of the squad.
I think it'll be Harry Winks.
No, but Harry Winks isn't unfair. That's completely fair. Harry,
and
Winks,
also, Harry Winks isn't a big enough name that it'll clash that much that it'll tear the dressing room.
I feel like it could be Lloris or something.
No, Lloris will go. I think it'll be fine. It's always, you can't pick it for 2 seasons. It'll be somebody signs, probably.
Yeah, because Ericsson, he's already... Ericsson's already
signed someone
out
who he hates.
Yeah, it's like he signed Pogba, and then by the third season, do you remember the clip of them not even handshaking on the training ground? About 3 weeks later, he was sacked. So
we were already at the fun time in Mourinho's time at Spurs where he's complaining about transfers. He was saying today, he was like, you know, look, we can't be going for Bruno Fernandes type because like we just don't have that sort of money.
And also when he's overly nice. He's in the really PR really game. Nice. Oh, he's really trying to be nice to
ball boys and stuff.
Well, like Dele has just like immediately seen a resurgence. He's like wrapping his arm around
him. It's almost like he was great all along. He was absolutely
shock.
And then within 2 years, Mourinho will go back to hating everyone and being hated by everyone.
Okay, so for anything but football this week, we've decided not to talk about Elon Musk having to defend himself for calling that guy a pedo who rescued those children from a cave. so instead we're going to talk about the best films, TV and music of 2019. Obviously a lot of publications like The Guardian right now are running their best of the year lists, but I kind of want to know what your picks are. So I think we're going to start with films. I've realised I've seen absolutely nothing this year, so I would welcome some suggestions.
George?
I have been to cinema once this year and watched one of the worst films my eyes had the displeasure of viewing.
Was this the
which
Beatles
was
one?
The Beatles one, where the guy, where everyone forgets about the Beatles and he just writes their songs, but
makes no sense.
It makes no sense. Then randomly two people know who the Beatles are and turn up, and it's just really odd. And it's got Tamwar from EastEnders in it, which is quite funny.
I don't know that.
But the it was oh,
doesn't
it
have John Lennon in it.
Carl,
spoiler alert.
Who was is it? Carlisle, he was in Trainspotting.
Robert Carlisle,
Robert Carlisle. He's in it as John Lennon, uncredited, which is very odd.
What, so he goes and sees John Lennon? He goes and sees John Lennon. Who didn't get shocked, he didn't get famous.
Yeah, but he's just like a fisher in some island somewhere, and he just turns up and he meets him, and I'm just really confused. And it's
Yoko in it? that would be
Yoko,
great.
Yoko didn't make any appearance, but honestly, like, it was just such a, like, horrible film to watch. It wasn't funny. Ed Sheeran was in it for about 3 hours. No one likes Ed Sheeran. He's a knob.
I've realised that we should have actually done our worst of the year. That would have been. Maybe we'll do that on the next episode of this roundup. But so, do you actually have a film you liked that you saw this year?
I mean, was Breaking Bad film even a film?
Yeah, that counts.
Yeah,
as a
we'll
film.
Count that.
I mean, it was a bit average. It was a bit average. It was no, there was really no.
It was
need
a TV
for
episode.
It. Yeah, it was like a 2-hour-long TV episode that didn't need to happen, and it was just I don't know why they bothered making it.
Just
I mean,
placating
for money.
The fans, placating the Reddit pages that wanted to know what happened to Jesse Pinkman. But I thought it was fine.
It was fine. Yeah, fine.
It didn't fuck the series, which was good.
It didn't put a damper on the series, but it also didn't add anything that.
Yeah,
but the end of the series was pretty bad anyway, so it's like I don't really mind so
shocking
much.
Shocking for like, me that. Like, the end of the series was
I love the series, but the last episode of the series is absolutely atrocious.
Oh,
the last two episodes are so bad.
No,
I mean, it was kind of ridiculous when he had a remote controlled. LMG
and that nobody
firing everywhere.
And nobody saw any of this. Like, also when he's just like, "Oh, I don't have the keys to the car," and then like the like little the little light shield drops down and the keys are behind it. I was the best explanation of it was always that what actually happens in that episode are like the fantasies of a dying man as Walter White freezes to death in that car, not able to find the keys. I think that's because, you know, like they're like Skylar's being watched by the police, but he manages to just fucking walk into her house like a wizard. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, but he is a wizard.
No, he's not. He's just a bloke. He's just a chemistry teacher.
I mean, he's more than that, though, isn't he? That's
well,
what's been built
he's
up
a drunk
over the course
baron.
Of six
he's not a fucking
seasons.
Master of disguise.
No, but he is a master of deception.
Why are we talking about this? Anyway, your favourite films of the year. Come on.
Okay, so I've seen more than George, thankfully. I think John Wick 3.
I haven't seen it. I saw John Wick 1 on a plane, and it
did
was.
Did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it.
Like the
I was,
action,
but I wasn't quite sure why it's become such a big thing. I was like, yeah, this is an action movie.
Okay, so John Wick
I like
1.
The dog.
Yeah, John Wick 1 was exceptional. I think it was up there in terms of some of the best action sequences.
It's got the most headshots of any film I've ever seen.
How did it compare to like The Raid?
It's not as good as The Raid, but it's a similar sort of fast-paced action. That speed of action.
So not really
like
a proper storyline, just shit going on constantly.
I mean, the storyline is effectively revenge. Like, he's just trying to get revenge.
And there's
revenge.
Zero peril to it as well. Yeah, like, you know that in every scene, like,
he's
in every scene,
them.
He basically, like,
he brutalizes
someone over,
people.
Shoots them in the head. Flips
yeah.
them over,
breaks their
the
arm,
head.
Shoots in the head.
Shoots them, like, three times. They carry on fighting, then he shoots them in the head.
Shoots everybody in the head. And
it's unbelievable.
But it is quite, like, that element makes it quite fun. John Wick 2 was a significant step down on one. And John Wick 3 is back up to one levels. There's a one sequence where he's being chased through Chinatown and it's a knife fight with throwing knives, which is out of this world. One of the best action sequences I've seen this year. It's really good.
Do I need to watch John Wick 2 or can I just skip to 3?
No, you don't really.
I don't need, I'm not going
to
miss
skip
important
plot points. Skip to John Wick 3.
The evolution
okay,
of John Wick.
Okay, so John Wick 3 is the story as he's being chased by assassins.
Okay, that's
fine. All you need to know.
Okay, that's basically the premise of all of them.
Yeah, that's the premise of all of them.
Stop chasing him. Just like be, just call it off.
But he's just like on this mad, mad tear, and it's got like Halle Berry in it. He goes and fights alongside her, and there's some unbelievable. If you like the dog
Oscar
sequences,
Halle
dog
Berry.
In the first one, there's dog fight sequences in number three. They're just insane.
I don't want it to fight though. I just want it to be cute.
No, he's got two Alsatians that just are just ripping men's heads off.
I feel like the best dog fight scene of the year is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, right? Like the dog fucking up member of the Manson family.
It's not as good as John Wick. John Wick 3 has the best dog scenes of the
year.
But
the end of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is
fantastic.
Is so tremendous. Like,
so good.
That's got to be in this conversation, right? I thought it was great. Like, so, yeah, I mean, there are lots of bits of it where it kind of does meander, but I don't mind that with Tarantino. And then some of the scenes, like, even just the way he builds tension, you know, when they go to the Spahn Ranch, when Brad Pitt's at the ranch, like, all that's, it's just like, it's something that you forget that Tarantino, as well as being like kind of, he can say stupid things in the press and like he's self-indulgent and all these other things, but he's so good at having complete mastery of like his medium.
And I just thought the whole time, I didn't think that that was going to be the ending. Like, there was no
really?
Part of me that was like, oh, they're going to try and attack Sharon Stone and he's going to end up in his house. Like, I've just ruined that for a lot of people.
I'll be honest. I said to Emma going in that I thought that was what was going to happen because I figured, because he'd said before, you know, that it was almost part of a trilogy with Inglourious Basterds and Django.
Yeah.
And both of those end, obviously, with, you know, like these big acts of like...
But
a
the
violent, historical
it's
revenge.
So good. The last 20 minutes is undoubtedly the best 20
and
minutes
so
of any
funny.
Film this year.
It's so funny. That girl who screams for about 20 minutes solid.
So good.
She's just screaming the whole time. It's fucking incredible. And then the flamethrower came out. Like, people
incredible.
Were cheering. It was just
yeah,
it was great.
It really is good. I think it's a shame I watched it on a plane, actually. I watched it on a plane and that.
Yeah, I think it deserves to be seen on a big screen.
Yeah, definitely.
But I also saw Midsommar, which is good. Did either of you see that?
No.
So it's a horror movie. Did you guys see Hereditary?
Oh, is this the Midsommar? It's just madness, just crazy.
Yeah, basically, it's like...
Because I've heard some really mixed opinions on this. Some of my friends said
that.
It's appalling.
I mean, I thought it was amazing. It's got Florence Pugh in it, like, who's just kind of, like, become a star this year out of nowhere. And, you know, every horror movie you see, it's like kind of a dark house at night.
Yeah.
And this is a horror movie where the majority of it is set in, like, blazing sunshine at, like, a sort of Scandinavian, like, midsummer festival that gradually
gets,
it's just
gets, really
like,
gory, isn't it? Is it really gory?
It has its gory moments, but it's also like just weirdly unsettling. Like, I'd say the majority of it, it's not jump scares. Like, the majority of the time, you're just like, something feels wrong and weird. And it's also funny. Like, but yeah, I'd probably put that up there. And I also, it doesn't really count because it came out last year, but I saw The Favourite this year when I was in Paris.
I've not even heard of that.
And it was the one that Olivia Colman won the Oscar for.
Sophie from Peep Show.
Sophie from Peep Show won an Oscar. And it's great.
What about Hobbs and Shaw?
Haven't seen it.
It's a spin-off. I mean, it's okay. It's not the best of the Fast and Furious films, but equally, it's just a classic Fast and Furious.
What does it just say? Does he say, I'm Black Superman?
He does say that, yeah.
Okay,
that's what
I mean, it's probably a fair shout for best film of the year, then.
Yeah, I mean, it is very, very entertaining. There's a fight, I think it's in... I can't remember the country it's in, but like they've run out of guns. I think it's like Tonga or somewhere like that, and they've run out of guns and they do a hacker. They use wooden instruments to beat guns. It's fantastic. They have some EMP device that shuts down the guns, and then they just all beat all these agents to death. All
right, that's enough film. Right, let's move on to TV. What have you got for TV?
There's only one answer for TV. It's Chernobyl.
Haven't watched it yet.
Absolutely Chernobyl. Go and watch it.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
It's fucking ridiculous.
I haven't really watched much, like, a series this year.
Yeah.
But I've watched, like, pure rubbish, like Love Island.
Yeah.
And, like...
Love Island was a drop this year, though.
Yeah.
So
and,
was
like,
I'm a Celeb.
I kind of went off that. And, like, RuPaul's Drag Race went around my girlfriend's
That's
house.
That's a fair shout, though.
But there is some series coming out, well, start of next year. I mean, it's out in the US already. Always Sunny, next series is out already in the US. It's coming out in January, and so is the next series of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, the best comedy program of all time.
Yeah. Ooh. So let's hope it's good, because Larry David is getting on a bit now.
Oh, he's all right.
It'll be okay. It will be okay, but I don't think it'll be as good as the old series used to be.
I don't think he's as old as he looks.
I wonder how PC they're going to force him to be. I just hope they don't end up doing like a Takeshi's Castle, where I don't know if you've seen the new series, that's an absolute disgrace.
Do people win?
Have they had to make it less racist?
No, like, I'm not talking about it's more of it, like the injuries and stuff. Like you remember back in the day, it was like legs being chopped off and stuff like that.
I don't remember legs being chopped
off. Not literally, but when they're like falling sliding down hills, into metal doors.
I remember the stepping
stones.
It was unbelievably dangerous.
Yeah. And like you know when they're running around the maze and they're like just
honeycomb
flying
maze.
Out into mud pits and stuff, and it's just like what's at the bottom of that? Nobody knows.
Do you remember there was one challenge where like they'd be chased around by people with go-karts, but they'd put in like, and then they were being shot with lasers, but the lasers had been put in post.
Like, how did anyone win this?
Yeah, I was like, what is this? This isn't a game.
The thing is, Takeshi's Castle, I think, was filmed in like 1979.
Yeah, it's really
it's so old.
I know, but the new series, which is, I don't know who voices, I think it's Jonathan Ross.
Oh, God.
Which just sums it up. Yeah, I know. So I just hope they don't nerf it like they did with nerf Curb like they did with Takeshi's.
I think we've got, I think, just to mention a couple, I think Fleabag season 2 was absolutely incredible this year. Succession season 2.
I have heard of that.
That's really, really good. And I've just got into Terrace House as well, though I haven't watched the new season. Terrace House is like, it's like a Japanese reality show. They basically put three men, three women in a house, sometimes in Tokyo, sometimes in another area of China. And it's kind of a dating show, but they're also just like normal and nice to each other. Like they're not like fucking buff or like super hot, like Instagram influencers. They're just like normal people who go to work. Like there's a guy in this who's like, I'm a hairdresser. And they're like, oh, where's Uchi been? And he's been like, I was at work. Like he's just fucked off to work. Like, and they're all just really nice to each other. And then it cuts between these and then like six or seven presenters who are like commentating on it, who are, I think, really funny. And there's always like a child. There's like a 14-year-old child. They're
what
asking.
What the hell is this show?
Is this real? Is this a dream?
It's on Netflix. And I swear to God, it's really, really good. And it's really heartwarming. Like they cook for each other and just pleasant. Like, so if it's kind of like,
sounds like the Japanese version of The Circle.
Yeah, but not shit. And also, I'd actually say the feeling you get from it is like, you know when the Great British Bake Off makes you really happy?
Yeah.
Like, it's like that. Whereas this year's Great British Bake Off was so bad.
I know a lot of those sort of shows have gone downhill. Love Island, I'm a Celeb, Bake Off, all rock bottom this year.
But I feel like with Love Island or one of those shows, you know, you could just get a good crop and it can go back up to the top again.
Yes.
Whereas Bake Off, I feel like there's been a big drop in standard just in presentation.
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, it went downhill from when that guy made a full lion's head out of bread.
That was great. It was good.
That was really good.
Wow. So, final thing. Songs, music, what have we got?
Who wants to go first?
Go on, you.
You look like you got a list.
You got a phone out.
I've got a list of six albums. So, my album...
Albums?
My album of
Igor is going to be on there.
Igor is on there with Tyler Crate. A very good album. Everyone should listen to it.
Because I've got A Boy Is a Gun as one of my favourite songs of the year.
But my favourite album of the year is Bandana by Freddie Gibbs and Madlib.
Okay.
For me, it's easy one. The Piñata was one of the best rap albums of the decade. I mean, I think there's no competition with it. So good. And this year, Madlib decided to make every instrumental on an iPad. So, and it's still very good.
Quite Madlib-y.
But yeah.
How did he make every instrument on an iPad? Am I getting lost here?
He's a genius.
What's your favourite song?
He had plugins or he was doing what?
What?
It was like plugins of sounds.
I don't know. I have no idea. Yeah.
He'll have like, you know, Sibelius or whatever.
He didn't have an app called Guitar and was just recording it.
Yeah, he did it on GarageBand.
My favourite song on the album is probably Fake Names or Crime Pays.
Okay.
So you're saying Crime Pays is the song of the year?
I wouldn't say a song of the year, but he's, as a collective album, I think it's album of the year.
What about Danny Brown?
Danny Brown, you know what I'm saying, is a very good album. Very, very good album.
I like Theme Song, maybe.
Yeah, I like Belly of the Beast. I don't really like the song with Run the Jewels.
No.
I think it's quite
average. I thought that was one that I was actually looking at some lists today of like best songs of the year, and that was on a lot of them, like the Run the Jewels song. And I was just like, really? Of all the ones?
And my last rap album I really liked was Zoo by Denzel Curry.
Yeah,
I've been listening to Denzel Curry for ages. Like he was part of like the Raider Clan with Space Ghost Perp back in the day, and did some songs with Metro Zoo and people in Miami, but now he's like one of the world's biggest rap stars. And two other ones which is not rap, Infest the Rat's Nest by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
What is going on with these names? I don't know any of these albums, by the way.
Basically, that's their metal album, but they've released like four albums a year in all different genres, and it's really good. And then like a nice, you know, like Drive, the film, like that kind of song. There's like, it's called Boy Harsh. They're called Boy Harsh. They released an album called Careful, which is really like Simphy. Okay. Quite like, but apart from that, I think it's pretty quite.
I mean, that decent, was so much. There was like six albums.
That was
it's,
great.
It's a decent year in music, not the best. I mean, given that Ed Sheeran's number one streaming worldwide again on Post Malone, it's not great, is it? But I guess Post Malone had a decent album this year.
I've got Corn Maze by Malibu Ken in there as well, and I've got Cellophane by FKA Twigs, which I think might be my favorite song of the year. Like FKA
on a new album,
FKA Twigs' new album. I
don't know who these people are.
It's a bit all over the place, but it's really good. You should check
some of it
out.
Is he a rap artist?
No, she is like a...
It's almost like a performance. She was going out with Robert Pattinson. She was engaged to Robert Pattinson.
Yeah, okay. But she is... I guess it kind of like... It's actually quite Kate Bush-like stuff now.
Oh, right,
but
okay.
It used to be like this weird inverted R&B, and there still is some of that. So like Future is on one of the songs on the album. Like,
oh, right,
Holy
okay.
Terrain. But it's weirdly kind of art poppy, like Kate Bush.
Yeah, like
stuff.
I saw FK Twigs live at Primavera, and it was very artsy. Like, yeah. It's all very like...
Well, she was a ballerina as well. She was a backup dancer and then became a singer. And like, she spent this whole year pretty much learning to pole dance.
Yeah.
Like, and then put it in like her video for Cellophane, like her pole dancing. Like, and she's genuinely like a professional grade dancer. So if you go back to 2 weeks or whatever, like, which is kind of her seminal song, like you're watching the video and there are all these backup dancers. And as they push in, you realize that like all the dancers are her. Like in the background, it's really fun. What about you? You must have some.
I don't really listen to a lot of like rap music, and that to be fair,
all your music is enjoyed like at 2 a.m.
Yeah, it's best enjoyed at like when four between 4 and 6 a.m. in the morning. I don't know. I was struggling to be fair. Skywalking by Matame, who probably you guys might not have heard of, very very good song. Okay. Peggy Goo, Starry Night.
Sure,
that is massive track. I think. Got to be up there, but my favorite song just to listen to in the flesh this year has been Hypersonic Missiles by Sam Fender, but the Patrick Topping remix of it, just in the flesh. The amount of times I've nearly cried to that in real life at 5 a.m. when I'm telling you,
when like, you're at your most vulnerable,
when you're at your most vulnerable, but 5 a.m. and Patrick Topping plays Hypersonic Missiles, something different takes over your body. So
I'm actually going to listen to that.
Go and listen to it after. So I don't know if you enjoy Sam Fender. Do you know, guys know who Sam Fender is? It's like a bit of an acoustic artist, average. But Patrick Topping's like done a remix of his song.
So who's fantastic. The best thing? Have you seen much music live?
Yeah.
This year?
Tale of Us I went to on the weekend. Absolutely the best thing I've ever seen live. Tale of Us at Printworks. Went to it this weekend. Just different world, that is.
Who do I see live?
I saw Danny Brown live at Primavera.
That's pretty good.
He came out to Iron Man by Black Sabbath, which is pretty good. Saw JPEG Mafia. He was absolutely mental. He was doing.
I saw JPEG Mafia.
He was doing the worm on stage. He was just shouting, waving a French baguette in the air, jumping into the crowd, making everyone sit down. He was crazy. Tame Impala, pretty good live as well. Very good light show. Also, it was very good. Charlie XCX at Primavera.
Yeah. I love
very
Charlie.
Very good. Very
I love
good,
Charlie
yeah.
XCX, man. Charlie XCX's new album is pretty good. Like, Gone from that is great. Like, I'm actually a big Charlie XCX defender.
Miley Cyrus, not good.
I'm stunned.
At Primavera.
Really shocked at that.
At Primavera on the main stage. Very Ooh. Poor. Very poor.
I'm really surprised about that. Georgia Smith I saw live.
Okay.
Very good.
I'm not
very,
actually a big
very
Georgia
good singer.
Smith fan.
Very good singer.
Sure,
but like not the best like stage presence I would describe it as. Like probably a fantastic recording artist, but not.
I saw Cupcake live as well.
Really?
Yeah, that was wild.
What was that?
It was wild. Very funny, very funny, but very wild. It's a very surreal experience if you ever see Cupcake live, especially at a festival as well. It's crazy. Lots of stuff going on.
Pat.
No, I haven't really seen much live music this year. I can't remember when did I see. Was Lauryn Hill this year or last year? And then I saw like a bunch of like random like post-punk like stuff when I was in Paris. Like I was like I kept going to like I kept finding myself in like gigs of like weird like. Oh, and I almost saw Tommy Genesis. That was like the nearest thing that happened this year. Like, I just don't really go to live music. It's not a thing I really do much anymore.
Apart from music, I feel like it's been quite a quiet year in terms of all
the arts.
Yeah. Sorry,
what other arts are there?
Books.
Painting.
Books are good.
Saw Eric Andre live, which is mental. But you know.
You see his penis?
He tucked it in.
Oh, okay, so sort of.
Brilliant. Wow.
Sort of is the answer. Well, in classic Eric Andre style. And I think that will bring us to a close for this week. Thank you very much for joining me, guys. Do we have anything to plug?
No other podcast is there. If you want to go and watch Chris Hamill get relegated out of Stat Wars, I'd recommend doing that.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend that. He's patently furious about it as well. It's excellent.
He's trying to play it down, but we all know deep inside he's fuming at one of the creators of the show is down.
All right, well, thank you very much for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.
Bye.